Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'll make a few remarks first before I take some questions. So over the past 6 months, we've seen quite a few ups and downs in the data. Things are pretty bumpy, and I think I've used that term before. Obviously, we try to take a much longer view than just day-to-day, month-to-month, quarter-to-quarter data points. But I think what the most recent data do reinforce is that we must continue to be vigilant about the continued risk of high inflation. Now, I've said before that we have made progress here, and we're not going to jeopardise that. The rise in interest rates that has been required to bring down inflation has been painful for many people. Inflation, though, as I've said before, is bad for everyone, and we have to see the job through. We believe we have rates at the right level to return inflation to the target range next year. But as we've said in the past, getting inflation back to target will take time. And I think the path will likely continue to be bumpy, and we should all be prepared for that. We're also dealing with a very tight labour market. Inflation is high and it's declining only gradually. And this is similar to the experience in other countries. Services inflation also remains high. So we also know that the experiences of Australian households are extremely varied. On the one hand, there's some people who are managing to save despite higher inflation and interest rates. In fact, some of those with mortgages are still making extra payments into offset and redraw accounts on top of their required payments. But on the other hand, we also know that there are households who are really struggling to make ends meet. These people don't have a lot of extra savings. They might be working a second job, cutting back on discretionary items, or making difficult decisions such as putting off medical appointments. These people are doing it very tough, and the board and I are very conscious of that. One of the outcomes of this is that consumption, household consumption, is very weak. And you can see that in the retail figures from last week. Growth is very subdued, even though population growth is strong. We also know the housing market is very tight, and anyone who is trying to get a rental property can tell you just how challenging that is at the moment. As I've said before, bringing inflation down, we want to keep employment growing. This is the difficult path that we are trying to navigate. Right now, we believe that rates are at the right level to achieve this, but there are risks, and at this stage, the board is not ruling anything in or out. We must get inflation back to the target band, low and stable in the background. That's the best thing we can do for all Australians. We're watching the economy very closely and we will adjust policy as needed. We cannot let high inflation take hold. So with that, I'm happy to take some questions. So.
Thank you very much for your address, Governor. Jack Whale from NTA Newswire. We have a federal budget next week. We also have state and territory budgets over the next 2 months, South Victoria state budgets today. I guess, can you speak to the risk that those spending decisions pose to your inflation fighting efforts when they're not factored into the Reserve Bank's forecast?
Sure. So I'm conscious that there are budgets coming up. The point I would make is that the Treasurer, Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers, he says publicly and he says to me in private that he does have inflation in his mind while he is thinking about the budget. And I think that I've said this before as well, budgets are very difficult they're big balancing acts for governments. They've got lots of things on their plate. And I think they are all conscious that they want to help us beat inflation, so they don't want to try and add to inflationary pressures, but we'll just have to see what the budget comes out like, and then we can think about how that might impact our forecasts. But as I said, the signs, at least by what's being said, are to me that inflation is at front of mind.
From LiveWire Markets. There's been a change in tune between your statements in March and May. Back then, inflation was falling in line with forecasts and there are encouraging signs that inflation was moderating. Now inflation is declining slower than expected. Mm. You mentioned it's been a bumpy ride. Mm. Given these changes or omissions, would you agree the board is significantly more concerned about inflation than it was 6 weeks ago? And if that's the case, why not hike rates today?
I think let's just take a step back a little bit and think back to November last year when we raised interest rates. And at the time we talked about, we thought the risks had shifted a little bit to the upside and we were taking out a little bit of insurance. It's true that the data towards the end of last year and the early this year led everyone to sort of think, oh, it's okay now. I think we've always felt that it was a bit too soon to declare victory, and I think the numbers in recent weeks have demonstrated that for us. We think policy is restrictive. We don't think we necessarily have to tighten again, but we can't rule it out. If we have to, we will. If we really think that inflation is going to be persistent and significantly above our forecast, we will tighten again. But the board made the judgment at the meeting that the right stance at the moment is to stay where we are, continue to observe what's going on in the economy, be data-driven, and, as I said, we might have to raise, we might not.
Governor Peter Ryan from the ABC.
Peter.
Was there any discussion or debate at the two-day meeting about raising interest rates?
Yes, that was one of the things that the board discussed. So the board did discuss the option of raising interest rates. It discussed the option of keeping interest rates where they were. As I said, on balance, the board felt that the at the moment, staying where they are was appropriate. We think that policy is currently restrictive. That doesn't rule out that we mightn't have to raise rates, but it doesn't mean we will have to raise rates. So there was a discussion about it, but the board decided on balance to stay where it was.
Governor James Glynn from the Wall Street Journal. The tightening cycle is now 2 years old as of today. Happy birthday. And it's 425 basis points old as well. And still the inflation rate is kicking around the 4% mark, and the unemployment rate, I think miraculously, I think we'll all agree, is sub 4%. And there's a group in the markets that argue that that's evidence that the RBA simply hasn't gone hard enough. Mm. We should have mimicked the overseas example. You know, we've got the RBNZ going well above 5%, etc. Mm. And Australia should mimic that. How do you respond to those people who argue that we just haven't gone hard enough, that the Reserve Bank's been too timid, and you know, we may actually have to push the cash rate towards 5%?
So I would respond by saying that at the moment our judgment, as I said, is that we are on the tight, we have got restrictive financial conditions, and we see that in the household sector. You would know that there was some recent work done by the IMF, and it looked at how interest rates impact various countries, and it's very clear that it impacts Australia very quickly because of our relatively high share of variable rate mortgages. We're very conscious that we have a dual mandate. Yes, we've got to get inflation down, and if we don't get inflation down, it ultimately isn't good for employment. But we are trying very hard to get it down while maintaining employment growth, and that's the balance we're choosing. Have we got it right? Have we got it wrong? We think at the moment we're probably okay. Our domestic conditions aren't the same as domestic conditions in other countries. We do have our own domestic conditions to consider, and I think it's as I said, at the moment we think we've got it right, but things are uncertain, and if we have to move, we will.
Thank you, Governor. Your February statement on monetary policy had inflation returning to the midpoint of the target band in 2026, but that assumed interest rate cuts in the second half of this year and into next year as well. Mm. You've now got the same inflation profile, but you've adopted market pricing, effectively suggesting no cuts in the next 12 months at least. Mm. So should people be interpreting that as effectively saying no rate relief this year, and possibly early next year?
Yes, it is slightly confusing. It's an assumption we make because we need to make an assumption for our forecasts. What we do know, though, and we need to do forecasts, we need to do them, but we do know that the further out you go, the more uncertain it gets. So for the purposes of the forecasts, what drives inflation down in the later years is the fact that there is a higher interest rate path in there. Is that the interest rate path that's eventually going to be actualised? I don't know the answer to that. So it is very a technical model-driven proposal, which I just don't, I think, you know, if you interpret that as sort of that's the path we're definitely going to take, I think you're reading too much into it. So, yeah.
Thanks, Governor. This is Patrick Cummins from the Australian newspaper. You talk about how it's been a bumpy ride on inflation and getting it back to target. Can you give a little bit more colour around what it would take, the kind of conditions that you would need to see that would tip the RBA, you know, further towards a rate hike? I mean, is it the case that you get another 6 months of a disappointing inflation, or unemployment just doesn't go up? You know, can you give us a little bit more colour around what it would take?
Well, that's quite challenging for a couple of reasons. The inflation forecast in the next little while is going to be quite driven by petrol prices, which can go up and down, obviously. So it is going to be a little bit elevated in the near term, in the next 6 months, and then we think it's going to come down. Inflation at the moment is still declining, but it's declining less quickly than we thought it would. So at the moment, we still think that we can make our target of coming back into target range by 2025. We have been discussing at the board what is the tolerance for that. We're not putting any numbers on that yet. I'd have to say that we're a little reluctant to say, you know, 1 month here, 1 month there. But really, it's if we saw that inflation expectations were starting to shift and that it was going to take markedly longer to come back into target, then we might have to be thinking about whether or not there needs to be an interest rate rise. But at the moment, that's not our central forecast.
Thank you, Governor. Peter Hannam from The Guardian. Just to clarify, from your statement, there is no tightening bias. You're still maintaining a neutral bias, as I see some economists are now interpreting your statement. And secondly, one change from the February forecast is quite a big uptick in public demand that adds to growth in the economy. Is it fair to say that if there hadn't been that increase, we might actually have an interest rate cut more likely this year?
That's two questions. I'll answer the first. The second might be better directed to my forecasting colleagues who know more about this sort of thing than the specifics of the forecasting than I do. But yes, there isn't in the sense of in the past when we've had statements, we've said we may increase interest rates. We haven't put that explicitly back in. But I think if you read the statement, you will see that the board is signalling that they are very alert to the fact that it might be a little bit higher, and they're remaining vigilant on that. So there is still very much that we still use the words, and I used them last time as well. We're not ruling anything in or out because things are uncertain. But there is just, the recent data have just indicated to us, we need to be a little bit alert and vigilant on this.
Thanks, Michelle. Chris Reason from Channel 7. You mentioned there in your drivers for the key drivers for inflation, tight jobs, petrol, services, industries, etc. You just mentioned there as well population. Can I ask you about the impact of immigration? Where do you stand on that? I know that last year in November you said you welcomed it. Immigration was a good thing for Australia. Do you still stand by that, given the sticky nature of the inflation figures now and the impact it is having on the economy?
So a couple of points. Immigration broadly, over the long sweep of history, I think has been positive for Australia. What we've observed, though, with the pandemic is that immigration has had really big swings. We had the borders closed, we had no immigration, and then the borders opened and then we had a massive increase in immigration. My understanding, and I think this goes into our forecasts, is that the government is looking to put immigration on a much more steady footing going forward rather than these big swings which we've seen. But we've been through, you know, once in a 100-year shock through the pandemic. On the impact in inflation, it's not actually that straightforward because, yes, they add new migrants add to demand and there's been that element of it. They've certainly added to pressure on the housing market, we know that. But on the other hand, they've added to labour supply. And one of the biggest complaints that I used to hear from businesses during the pandemic and during the border closures was they couldn't get people, they couldn't get staff. And even as we were coming out of those circumstances, you'll remember the labour market was so tight, businesses just could not get workers. So they've added to the supply side of the economy as well. So I think our judgment is that on balance it really hasn't added dramatically to inflation, with the exception that it's put big pressure on the housing market, and that's obviously working its way out in rents, and that's the one bit where it's. But otherwise, I think it's been pretty much a muchness.
Afternoon, Governor. Chris Kohler from Nine News. This afternoon, the market's pricing about a 25% chance of an increase in the cash rate by August. Do you think that the balance of probabilities has shifted from the need for a cut this year to perhaps the need for a hike?
I think at the moment, so back in the last meeting, we thought that things were reasonably balanced. I think we still think they're reasonably balanced, with perhaps a little bit of a signal that we need to be very watchful on the upside. So I wouldn't think about it in terms of balance of probabilities. I don't ever think we said there was a balance of probabilities it would go down last time. I think I've been fairly careful to say if we're being neutral, we're not ruling out an up or a down, and we're not ruling them in or out. So I don't think it's shifted the balance of probabilities dramatically. We still think things are reasonably balanced, but the cost on the upside is higher than it is on the downside, if you like. So even if the risks are balanced, it's more costly if we end up with higher inflation than we're expecting. So I think that's the way I would describe it.
Thank you, Governor. Nadia Daly from ABC News. Given the stickiest elements of inflation are essential services and demand for discretionary goods and services is already slumping, will any future rate hikes really be effective?
It's a good question. It's one that people often ask if you can't do anything about it. Why raise interest rates? The challenge is that in order to get inflation back down to the 2 to 3%, if some things are increasing by more than that, other things have got to be increasing by less than that. And that's typically what we've observed. You always have a range of different price increases in the CPI. Some are increasing by more than, say, 3%, and others are increasing by much less than 3%. So that's always a balance. If other parts of the economy are resulting in inflation which is much higher, then we do need, it's the only tool we've got, but we do need to think about using interest rates to impact the parts of the economy we can impact. So that, because if we don't get inflation down, as I've said before, that's just bad all round. It'll be bad for employment, it'll be bad for the whole of the Australian people.
Thanks, Governor. Shane Wright from the SMH and The Age. The forecasts have downgraded economic growth to 1.2% to mid-June and then 1.6% to the end of the year. But you've got unemployment at 4%. Mm. So you've reduced the unemployment rate forecast. Mm. How, as a macroeconomist, can you reconcile exceptionally poor growth but an exceptionally tight jobs market, the like of which I can't recall historically an unemployment rate at 4 or under, and growth in per capita terms, you're in a recession. So how does the bank think of what's going on in that interaction?
So, yes, consumption is very low, and as I sort of spoke about earlier, there's two components to that. Some people are cutting back on consumption, and some are cutting back to save, and some are cutting back simply because they just don't have money, and that's having an impact. What's going on in the labour market is a very interesting question, and I don't really have a full answer for you. What I can say is a few things. The first is that a lot of the jobs are being created in education and health, and these are not cyclical things. These are obviously a lot of them are government, and they're essential services in effect. So there's a lot of employment going on there. Some of the areas where employment isn't growing as strongly and in fact may be declining are areas in hospitality and retail where, in fact, you are observing the impacts of demand. So I would say you are observing some of it. The other couple of points I'd make is, and these are sort of a bit more speculative, but they're things people talk about. The first is that, as I said, back about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, businesses couldn't hire enough people. They just couldn't find people. And so we think that some of what's going on might be that businesses are only just starting to be able to hire the sorts of people that they're looking to hire. So they're only just getting on top of that. So that's another reason why employment might be strong. And then a third reason, which we've talked about, and I'm not sure there's a lot of evidence about it, but it gets bandied around, is hoarding, labour hoarding. So that businesses don't want to lay people off just yet because they're worried that if they lay them off, they'll get caught like they got caught, you know, 18 months ago, laid off people and then had to try and rehire them and they couldn't. So there's an element of labour hoarding going on possibly. So there's a few explanations there for why we think the labour market is still maintaining relative strength. It's worth remembering too, not only is the unemployment rate really, really low by historical standards, the participation rate's at historical high levels. So it's not a United States situation where a lot of people have dropped out of the labour force. They're still there. So I think it's probably a combination of a number of factors that's keeping the employment market strong. Again, I go back to the fact that all of this was disrupted by a once-in-100-year event in a pandemic. And I think all of our history on unemployment and the way unemployment responds is not based on this sort of shock happening in the economy. So I think that's why we just need to be very, very... not basing necessarily our views on what historically might have happened. We've got to be alert to the fact it might be a little bit different this time.
Hi, Governor. It's Fiona Willen from Sky News. Thank you for taking our questions. New figures show that since the September quarter of 2022, the volume of retail sales have fallen by 1.8%. What does that tell us about how consumers are handling the current economic situation?
I think it tells us that consumers are responding to higher interest rates in the way we'd expect them to, which is in cutting back demand. And what we know is that they're cutting back on discretionary expenditure. They're doing things like they're downgrading. They're going to perhaps budget versions of things they might ordinarily buy more expensive versions of. Their basket sizes are getting smaller. As I said earlier, the other thing that households are doing, some households are doing, is they are saving more. And if you think about it, if you've got a mortgage and it's now 7%, and you have the choice of spending or perhaps saving a bit of money and sticking it in your mortgage, then a lot of people are choosing to do that because it's worth their while. It's 7% on less. Australians have a history of wanting to pay off their mortgages more quickly, and I think as interest rates have risen, I think what we've observed is initially what they've done is they've cut back on their sort of their extra savings, and then as they've adjusted their consumption, which we're seeing in the retail sales figures and other consumption figures, as they've done that, they're putting more money into offset and redraw accounts in order to get their mortgage under control. Now, that said, that's not all people. We know that there are a lot of people that don't have excess savings, they don't have that luxury, and they are the ones that we've talked a little bit about in our financial stability review who are actually struggling to have income to meet their regular expenditures. There is a portion of people that are like that, but there are some that do have the benefit of savings.
Hello, Michelle. Cecile from the Financial Review. Given strength in equities and housing, and bank loans, do you think that financial conditions are sufficiently restrictive?
Yes, so that's another good question. And we think that financial conditions are particularly restrictive on households. They're somewhat less restrictive on businesses. Small businesses, I think they're probably quite restrictive on because they're quite dependent upon bank loans. But to your point, equities, corporate bond markets and so on, there's sort of, for larger companies that can access those sorts of markets, they're actually finding it a smidge easier to get finance. So I think there's a little bit of a dichotomy there. We think that currently the judgment of the board is that financial conditions are restrictive enough to get the desired reduction in inflation, but it's true that it's much more restrictive on the household sector, we think, than particularly on the big end of business.
Michelle, Swati from Bloomberg News. My question is a follow-up to what Cecile asked. We had NAB CEO say that he was shocked at the resilience of the business sector. We have had record new car sales. Housing market is strong as well. Housing loans, auto loans, seeing strength there. Do you believe that Australia's economy can stomach further tightening in interest rates?
can it stomach further tightening? Well, I hope it doesn't have to stomach further tightening. I mean, as I said, I think conditions are restrictive. We know that interest rates impact different sectors of the economy and different households differently. And what we are really trying to do is slow things enough to bring inflation down without tipping the economy into recession. That's what we're trying to do. The reason that's important is because people, when they have jobs, are able to meet their needs. They're able to pay for their groceries. They're able to meet their mortgage repayments. So the worse the employment market becomes, the harder it is for people to meet those. And you add an inflation challenge on the top of that, and it's really hard. So that's what we're aiming to do. I hope that we don't have to raise interest rates again. Having said that, if we think we have to, we will.
Deb Knight from Nine Radio. I'm just wondering, on a personal level, how frustrating is it for you that inflation is proving so difficult to bring down to the target 2-3% range? Do you and the board find yourselves shouting into the wind or having an internal dialogue thinking, what is it going to take to get this job done?
Look, I think we would all like it to be coming down more quickly, and the reason being because it hurts. It really hurts. And I just find myself, I went to fill up my car with petrol the other day, and I got an absolute shock when I saw the price of it. Now, that's something that's really obvious to people, but there's an underlying chunk of stuff here which is just eating into people's spending power the whole time. So yes, it is frustrating, but I think we feel we're on the right path. And I come back to the point earlier that we're trying not to tip the economy into recession, because really the worst thing that could happen for many people is to lose their jobs. That would really tip them in. Then they'd have inflation and no job. At least at the moment, people can get work. They can get second jobs if they need to. There's a sense in which they can meet their needs by being employed. And that's what we're really trying to preserve. But frustrating might be one way of putting it, yes.
SBS World News. Governor, what do you say to people who were expecting and budgeting for a rate cut by the end of the year? What is the message for them?
Well, I hope I didn't give them any impression that there would be an interest rate cut by the end of the year. I certainly don't believe I ever gave people that impression. And you would understand why I'm very cautious about suggesting any particular rate increases or decreases for that reason. I would say to people who are struggling that I understand they are struggling. Part of the reason they are struggling is not just interest rates, though, it's inflation. And the best thing that I can do for them is to try and get inflation back down so that they don't have to worry about the prices of their everyday things continuing to go up. That's the best thing I can do for them. I understand the interest rates hurt, but that's the tool I've got, and that's the best thing I can do for them.
Governor Michael Pascoe, The New Daily. The statement effectively puts a number on what you regard as full employment, 4.3% unemployment. Media, we are always concerned with the unemployment rate. A factor you didn't mention behind the strong labour market, is it simply that not enough marginal, not very productive businesses have gone broke, that monetary policy hasn't tightened, been tough enough on business while it has been hitting households? The statement uses the euphemism of slowing capital and labour reallocation when talking about weak productivity growth. You want a 10% rise in unemployment. Do you need a 10% rise in the number of bankruptcies and business failures to achieve your outcome?
I wouldn't use the word need or want or like to see. I wouldn't use any words like that. I think the business circumstances are interesting. Back to the COVID again, back to the pandemic, there was a lot of money went out the door from governments to help households and businesses. Interest rates were at rock bottom levels. And in those circumstances, I think if you go back to the Financial Stability Review, you will see this, is that businesses in aggregate, yes, there'll be differences across them, but in aggregate, businesses' balance sheets improved markedly. They had a much better balance between their assets and liabilities. Their interest coverage ratios recovered. Their debt servicing went down. So it wasn't a surprise that there were many businesses in those circumstances who were actually doing quite nicely and their balance sheets were doing well. Coming out of that with interest rates rising, yes, I think some of those businesses that were perhaps being kept running because they just had really low interest rates and propped up balance sheets because of COVID-like subsidies, they're going to find it more difficult. And I think we are starting to see that. We're seeing now bankruptcies go back to around about the level they were historically as a share of businesses. So they are starting to come up. The other factor here is tax. And I'm not a tax expert, but I do know that the tax office is also looking for repayment of debts to the tax office as well. So I think all of these things are going to come to bear. Business, you do need business dynamism, to your point. You do need a bit of business dynamism if you're going to get productivity improvements. So, again, I think because of the whole COVID situation, we've just been in a very interesting period of time where you haven't seen the sort of turnover you would normally have seen in businesses.
So just a clarification, you expect the bankruptcy levels to go above what was the case to bring it back into balance?
I have no expectations in particular, but we are seeing them rise to more normal levels, more historically normal levels now than there were. Yes, we are seeing that.
It's a part of the statement that the bank doesn't really get into.
We talk about that in the financial stability review more typically, so I'd suggest go and have a look at the last financial stability review, and we have some information there on that sort of thing.
Thank you, Governor. Poppy Johnston from AAP. Now we're a few months into the new regime for monetary policy meetings. I was hoping you could reflect on how it's going. Is fuel meetings working well? Do you think it is hampering the board's ability to be flexible and react to incoming data? It would just be good to get your views.
Okay. We've had three meetings in this new format. It's also necessitated changes internally as well to the way we lead up to the board meetings. We had a bit of a reflection in the board today about how it's going, and I think the board think it's going quite well. The extra time, so the afternoon on the Monday and then the Tuesday morning, I think is giving ample opportunity to have a good quality discussions with the board. I think they're very open discussions. It also gives us an opportunity to come back in the morning on the Tuesday and add any reflections people had overnight, and some people do in fact have reflections overnight, and gives the board an opportunity as well to craft the statement which now comes from the board and not from me. And I can tell you that the board actively are involved in drafting the statement. So my personal view, and certainly if the board members are telling me the truth, and I trust they are, that they think it's working, they think it's working well, and that the slightly longer time period between meetings allows us to not get so fixated on individual ups and downs on monthly things and try and take a step a little bit back and try and think slightly longer. So I think that would be my reflections.
Thanks, Governor. John Keogh from the Australian Financial Review. You've not immaterially increased the inflation forecast, both headline and also underlying. We get another inflation upside surprise. Will the bank's credibility be on the line in terms of needing to react to that? Is it going to be a threshold issue for the bank going forward?
Well, I'm not going to deal in a sort of a hypothetical there. That's something that we're alert to, and obviously credibility is really important to be able to get inflation down, because we need credibility. We need people to believe we're going to get inflation down if we get it down. We don't want inflation expectations adjusting. The near-term increase in the inflation forecast that you've seen, they are driven, petrol prices is a really big part of that, and we know petrol prices can be up, they can be down. So to some extent we want to try and look through that. One thing I would highlight though is that the forecasts now don't look a hell of a lot different than the November forecast. November we increased interest rates, you'll recall. We did what we sort of took out a bit of insurance. We thought we needed a little bit of insurance, and I think that stood us in good stead. I think that's one reason why we can say at this meeting we'll just sit for a minute. If we hadn't raised in November, I think it might have been a different story. So, but, you know, if it does turn out that inflation stops declining and we can't sort of think about things like petrol prices as being part of that process, if the services inflation really, really gets stuck and gets stuck at a level which is inconsistent with our target band, then we're going to have to act. And that goes to credibility.
Tom Dusebig from the Australian Governor. Just following up John's question on inflation expectations, you point that out in the statement today as one of the risks. We're seeing that, on current forecasts, it's something like inflation would have been out of the band for, four to four and a half years. Mm. So that goes to credibility. But also in the popular mind, people aren't quite focused on inflation as a concept. They're focused on prices as a level. Mm. So people are now getting hit and getting used to, you said you were filling up the tank. Well, petrol prices go up and down, so do food prices seasonally. Mm. But some things we know just aren't going to go backwards. Mm. Insurance, education costs, rents, a whole range of things that are unlikely to go back. Mm. So again, are you confident that inflation expectations in the community more broadly won't change and that they won't feed into wages?
So we're not observing that happening at the moment. That's, and yes, wages have gone up and there has been some substantial increases in the minimum wage and award wages. So, and that's been feeding off inflation. But as headline inflation comes down, as the supply chain issues wash out and so on, we're seeing those sorts of things come down. And also prices that are indexed to inflation, they start to come down as well. So there's sort of a bit of the education and the health things, for example, there was an element of indexation in them which has added. So as inflation, headline inflation comes down, that will help reinforce that. I don't see a de-anchoring yet. Certainly we don't see it in the medium-term financial market expectations about inflation. And yes, very short-term expectations for inflation rose, as lots of things rose when the supply chain issues were on. But we start to see that coming off now, and I think they are moderating. You see a lot of wage agreements that have a high number in the first year and then they taper off in later years. So I think that's indicative that people do believe that inflation will come back down, and that's what we've got to make sure that we deliver.
Governor Stella Chiu from Reuters. I was just wondering, did the drawback in the unemployment rate in March surprise you? And how can you judge the true state of the labour market when the recent data are so volatile? And if I may, if the labour market keeps surprising on the upside, is that going to concern you?
Well, let me say that good employment outcomes I like. It's good that people are getting jobs. It's good that unemployment is low, and if we can all keep it that way, that will be great. The month-to-month numbers are very volatile, and we think there's some seasonal things going on there. But it's also true that we don't just look at the unemployment rate. You'll see in the statement on monetary policy, we do set out a range of indicators of the labour market that we're looking at. And there are some, employment is still growing. It's growing more slowly than it was. And our forecasts are that it's going to grow a bit more slowly than the workforce. So that will mean that mechanically the unemployment rate rises. It doesn't mean that there's mass sackings. It just means that you don't get as many people employed and as the workforce grows. So we do see that if we can have that outcome, that will be the best outcome for everyone. When you look at all the range of indicators, it's true that other things are moving. So, for example, hours worked is one margin of adjustment. So rather than laying people off, what businesses are doing is they're just reducing hours, perhaps. Or there's more part-time employment than full-time employment. So there's other margins on which the labour market can adjust. And And the other thing is that vacancies have come down, so that there was very large vacancies. There's not as many vacancies per unemployed person now as there was. So there's a sense in which, as the labour market has tightened, we haven't seen it eased. We haven't seen it represented in a rise in the unemployment rate, but we've seen it turn up in these other indicators of employment. Another one is, I mentioned a couple. One was hours worked. Another one is the employment full-time, part-time issue. Another one is youth unemployment, which is typically one of the first ones to turn. So these other things are demonstrating there is an easing in the labour market. It's just not necessarily showing up in the unemployment rate, but that's because the unemployment rate isn't the single thing that defines what's going on in the labour market.
Governor Juliet Sarli from AusBiz. I feel like I'm the last person picked in the PE team. It's hard when you're last. But I wanted to ask your thoughts about frustration with the only tool you've got, which you've said many times, it is monetary policy, the only tool you've got, particularly when you're kind of looking at this two-speed economy, people that really would struggle with a rate hike versus, as you've already mentioned, the inflationary impact.
Mm. My only thought on it is that it is the only thing we have. We talked earlier about fiscal, and to my mind, the governments are saying the right thing in trying to make sure that they try not to add to inflation. They've got, as I said, they've got their own particular issues to balance, policy issues to balance, but they are saying the right things. It's the same around the world. Central banks with their interest rates do tend to be the first port of call affecting inflation and looking at cyclically, because we have an impact on demand. We can't impact supply. I think everyone is very, very conscious that it's a blunt instrument. It works through particular channels, and that does have different impacts on different people, but it's a fact of life. It's what we've got. Thank you. That's it?
Thanks,
okay, thank you. Thank you very much.